Welcome to Church Drunk, a spirited conversation about faith, reason, and libations. Woo! Cheers, friends.
It doesn't cheers that great. Coffee mug.
Yeah. Well, no good cheers, but we're still drinking, just so you know.
No good cheers, but lots of good cheer.
It's Lent. We are dour.
Punch me
and our and our cups don't even clink. The bells are tolling somewhere.
Oh, man.
Anyway.
That spiraled out of control quickly. All right.
Well, so here at Church Drunk, we spiral out of control quickly.
Sometimes
that leads us into heresy and blasphemy. We don't mean to, except when we do.
Yep.
You've been warned. We're Catholic. You don't have to be.
Yep.
I don't know if it helps or not.
Sometimes we swear a lot.
We definitely do when we spiral out of control or when we're trying to right the ship. Sometimes just a little cuss word slips right out.
Yep.
So you've been warned, and we're happy you're here.
Yeah.
I am Dizzy with co-host... As always, guess what are you drinking?
Well, we're doing, it's still AM hours, barely.
No one needs to know about our tea drinking.
I'm having a little bit of Irish coffee. So I was still finishing up my coffee when we were getting ready for our recording. So I decided to knock a little whiskey in there and a little whipped cream and some sugar and life is good.
It's like a regular day for you.
Yeah, I know.
Keeping that Irish roll going. It's still the last bit of March.
Yeah. Well, I got so sick right after St. Patty's Day that I feel like I had a dramatic end. You know, usually there's like the leftover Guinness and the leftover whiskey and the leftover everything that you kind of work your way through. I went like full on teetotaler for like 5 or 6 days of just boozy shutdown.
We actually recorded an episode of Church Drunk on St. Patty's Day and you were like regular dude.
Yeah.
And the next day you were laid out flat.
Very ill.
Yeah.
Anyway, what are you drinking?
I am drinking a dark and stormy, and I chose this because I thought it went with our paradoxical theme for today. So traditionally a dark and stormy has two kinds of rum, one's light and one's dark, so that's kind of why I went with a paradoxical thing. And then you add some ginger beer, some lime, some ice, stir it up. It's refreshing and delightful. It could almost be summertime. It's a good summer drink, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's
a lovely beverage.
Not very Lenten.
And you,
but I don't care.
Well, you know, Lent is always kind of weird because, like, it's meant to be this very, like, you know, sort of somber, dark season, and yet it occurs during the springtime. So the world is getting
Lent
lighter and lighter.
Lent itself is paradoxical.
Lent itself is a paradox, yes.
And heading towards the brightness of Easter.
Yeah.
That shining
light. It makes it that much more of a challenge
year.
When it's, like, it's usually.
It is.
I mean, and this is a late Lent, so, but, like, usually it starts out in sort of a normal sort of dark phase. Of life, and then it gets brighter and brighter and brighter, which makes it more and more and more challenging to like still be Lenten.
Yeah.
So, anywho, today we're talking about Sister Joan Chittister's book, Between the Dark and the Daylight.
Yeah.
You laugh because I can't, I have to literally like
guess got it right this
at
time.
That name to
I
be
was
able to say it properly.
I was waiting for him to say
Chitterlings or something that
I
always.
Chitlins.
Yeah,
Chitlins. Sister Chitlins wrote us a book.
Sister Chitlins.
Okay, but Sister Joan Chittister is, I just want to say it right now because I looked it up, is a Benedictine sister of Erie, Pennsylvania. And she's written a lot of books. And this one's actually a more recent one. 2015 is the copyright. Between the Dark and the Daylight.
Between the Dark and the Daylight. And so we chose it as our Lenten reading. And I think we announced that back at the beginning with our first podcast of this particular Lenten season that we would be trying to tackle this one. We haven't made a ton of progress, if we go full disclosure on this, but we kind of wanted to check in just after reading a few chapters and talk about how it is kind of going to guide us through the remainder of Lent and how it relates and why we picked it for Lent. So the title, Between the Dark and the Daylight, is kind of explanatory of where Sister Chittister will be guiding us. So tell us, you know, like drop a little bit of knowledge in terms of, because you were the one that suggested the book to me. So
yeah, we were looking for a female author as well within something to pick for Lent. And the subtitle is Embracing the Contradictions of Life.
Right.
And this just seemed really like of the moment, culturally, spiritually. So I liked that aspect of it. And then, like you said, we just have read the first little bit. And she kind of just from the intro sort of lays it out like we as a people of the world or of the culture are in this place of chaos and of crisis. And yet we're still, you know, looking for that light.
Yeah.
And so we're sort of in a place of, you know, and she doesn't want us to just go back to the past. Like, I think a big part of her message is, like, letting go of those things, but still knowing that we're not in a good place. Yeah. And that feels, like, right on the nose for me.
Right. And I do think that, you know, I think that if you were to ask around, and who knows what, you know, hindsight, you know, 100 mm-hmm. years from now, 200 years from now, if there are still humans on Earth, fingers crossed, God, oh please.
But, smaller, you know, purer people.
When we look back on this era, I think right now we'd like to think of ourselves as being in the midst of sort of a modern day enlightenment, you know, that the access to information has increased so much, and that there's more of a global perspective, and that all of a sudden people are having light bulbs go off about, you know, the way that other people around the world live their lives. And it's supposed to connect us and unite us.
Yeah.
And yet at the same time, we are more divided than we have ever seen, at least in this country, you know, like, I mean, the divisions of, you know, whether you're on one side of the aisle or the other, it seems like every issue is like, pick which side you're on, and you can't be in the middle. Like,
there's this growing polarization amongst people's opinions on things. And there's also these like outside problems like climate change, the actual poles melting, you know, that are freaking us out collectively.
If you go back to, you know, the Middle Ages, we would never have known, right? Mm-hmm. Like people, the average person would have had no idea that the world's climate collectively was changing, or that, you know, people on the other side of the world were living differently. They didn't even know there was an other side of the world, right?
Yeah.
And so it's like, when you think about the way that we view our lives and our world, it should be something that unites us, brings us together, gets us to work towards common goals. And yet, here we are, like, bickering about everything.
One thing that she kind of calls out from the start that really resonated with me is that, and I think it's on both quote-unquote sides,
right?
Whichever direction people might fall on, there is sort of this desire to go back to some previous way that would be better, mm-hmm. right? And so, like, one side could say, let's go back to when things were super traditional and rigid, and that was better. And other people might say, no, let's go back even farther to when we were very connected to the earth and we lived in this holistic way.
Right.
And she's kind of saying, well, like, both of those things are weird, like pipe dreams. Like, those are not things that actually embrace the challenge of the moment. So I that idea really interests me, that we have to really look at in a new way.
Yeah. And I think that that's a common thread that I find amongst a lot of like spiritual reading, mm-hmm. you know, that is where, you know, like, yes, we build on the wisdom of the past, but we have to be thinking about how will a new dynamic, a new spiritual dynamic help us be ready for a new world and a new type of relationship with God, because God is dynamic and God is always kind of reaching out and meeting us where we're at. And we are at a point in history that you can really say it's never been like this before.
Right. She uses this idea of beaches, right? That the ocean's always turning things over and making new beaches.
Yeah.
And if you're wanting that old beach, whatever kind of beach it was, like, you're missing the new one. Yeah.
And I think even in secular reading, you know, like when you think about the books that are successful, you know, stuff like Malcolm Gladwell, where, you know, like there's kind of always a certain element of timelessness to it. Like these are the things that we feel that resonate with us because humans work a particular way. Mm-hmm. And yet at the same time, we have to build towards a new dynamic, a new understanding of that. And I think a lot of times we get into trouble in like the religious or spiritual realm where we say, well, tradition will always serve us like, in a modern world. So.
And that's another thing, because she does kind of reference a lot of the Desert Fathers and like people who are embrace that monastic style of life where it's like they're in the present moment.
Right.
Like tradition is fine, but that's not where you are.
You have to bring
everybody has to be in the present.
Into a real world.
Yeah.
And so we kind
of challenging.
Yeah, we picked the book. I mean, the title spoke to us of Lent in terms of, you know, Lent is this
literally
season of embracing the darkness so that you can hopefully build towards like the light that comes with Easter. But realistically, like Lent is about like the darkness that only leads to more darkness, because Lent gets you to Holy Thursday, Good Friday, and like, you know, God dying.
Right.
Which is not a good thing.
No, but Sister Joan does say that in these in times of upheaval, that high winds and great waves freshen life as well as threaten to swamp it.
Yes.
And I feel like, yes, but like how horrific to think of that in terms of like the Passion.
Right.
Right. Are you going to be like Good Friday, like Jesus, we're just freshening your life.
Right. Yeah.
Hold on in there, buddy. I know that wave feels like a horrific.
You'll be fine.
Yes. I mean, and so like that's the paradox, right? That both are true.
Yes. And it is. So, you know, the title and the book and Sister Joan's kind of approach to it speaks of paradox. And it is very much a season of paradox when you think about like. We have the benefit of knowing that Easter is coming, and yet at the same, you know, and you don't get to Easter. You can't get to the empty tomb without passing by.
Right. The only way out is through the cross,
right? Mm-hmm. And so, like, and that is paradoxically a message of hope, because no matter what suffering you go through, the resurrection says that yes, that suffering is going to suck, but it doesn't get the final say, you know. But at the same time.
Suffering sucks.
Lent is preparing for that suffering. Yeah. Like Lent is this cleansing season to really just suck.
Guess's takeaway message today. Yeah. Yeah. Hashtag Lent sucks.
Lent sucks. Like it's supposed to.
Okay. It is supposed to. Right. Yeah. And that's the thing, like, to embrace that sort of tumultuous wave. The other part that I thought of her early chapters message that is very Lent appropriate is this idea of carrying the light within.
Yes.
Of having something within you that sustains you. Because I think for us in this present moment of going through this season that's self-imposed, right? Like we're not Christ. We're not, you know, heading towards a particular death. And, you know, we have to like make it figurative, force ourselves through it. This idea of that you carry the light within you. And that's what we struggle with because the darkness becomes real.
It does.
Right? When we take a moment to pause and reflect on it. And this idea that she really espouses is that inside you has to be that little calm.
Right.
Right? That you carry that within you, even amongst. Yeah. And it's like one of those things that sounds really simple. Like, oh, okay. Like I have it within me when you're walking along and it's fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? So we do kind of feel this because the duration of it, like I always every year complain about it. But part of what wears us down in Lent is how long it is.
Yeah.
Like we kind of fell off the wagon a bit this last week and it's like, who cares? There's a bunch more weeks.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Like we were kind of talking before we started recording here that like I have been just awful at Lent so far, in part because, you know, like I got sick. But also like some of that's just a bullshit excuse, right? Like
Because you're tired of it.
Yeah, like I was laying around the house doing nothing for several days. Could have been doing Lenty shit. Like it's not physically straining to do Lent.
It's mentally straining.
But like I was like, nah, I think I'm just gonna watch some more Netflix. Like, you know, like and so that and we always talk about this every year, like built into Lent, this long sort of slog of Lent. Is also just kind of that constant opportunity to renew your Lenten promises and to be like, all right, like I sucked at Lent, but by sucking at Lent, I've actually been really good at Lent because Lent sucks. And so like the worse you are at it, sometimes the more it's like, oh, but that's the message I'm supposed to be getting is that like I'm terrible at everything.
Well, and continuing this like light within you metaphor, it's kind of being like, I don't feel like doing this. And then look at my light. It's like this little dim, like flicker of a lamp. I'm like, oh, my light sucks. I'm supposed to work on this right now. Exactly. I need to clean out some ashes.
Well, yeah. And I do think that part of Lent is that feeling of like inadequacy. Like you're supposed to be a little
bit
overwhelmed
by Lent. Yeah.
That if you're not a little bit overwhelmed by it or maybe a lot bit overwhelmed by it, then you're probably not doing it right, right? Mm-hmm. Like the ones that march around going, I'm so good at Lent. I haven't had meat on Friday since I don't know when. Those are the ones that Jesus literally was like, don't do it that way. Yeah. Don't be like that guy or that
Maybe
girl.
You should do something else.
Right? Like, you don't let your left hand know what your right hand's doing, yada, yada, yada. You know?
Speaking of things we don't eat on Friday, you know, tomatoes doesn't seem that hard until you get to the day of the week where you don't eat meat. And you're like, well, shit, all the, like, non-meat things I like have tomato in them.
It's true.
Every single curry. Yeah. I was scolded literally by the Indian restaurant regarding this, my basic knowledge of curry. Pizza, chili, most soups that I want to eat.
Yeah, could have a nice marinara sauce.
Every single CRS rice bowl thing. So even if I'm like, oh, let me make one of these in solidarity, I'm like, I'll just make this for others to enjoy.
I did. So yesterday was Friday, and I got home from work and made myself a little salami slider, as one does during Lent.
Happy Friday.
But you know what I threw on there? Big old fat slice of tomato, and it was delicious.
Toasting me, I see. Yeah. I realize, though, that I'm just hurting your daily snack life. So you hurt me really bad once a week, but I'm like a little gnat buzzing at you every other day.
You know why I was so hungry when I got home from work that I had to make myself a salami sandwich?
A lack of granola bars?
Because I was looking for a snack midday, and all there was in the candy dish was some form of nuts and chocolate.
Nuts and chocolate are a great combo.
Straight up milk chocolate, nothing. There was just nuts and chocolate combinations in that candy dish.
Just helping you be healthier.
By the time I got home, I was starving and I had to eat some meat. So thanks for making me violate.
The
universal Lenten promise that we all make for the sake of the one that I have to carry. My cross to bear.
I feel like I should feel worse.
Nutless Lent.
Second takeaway from guests. Hashtag Lent sucks. Nutless Lent.
Nutless Lent.
Whatever. So, nobody feels bad for you. I'm like eating fucking like pizza without tomatoes on it.
You can have a pizza with white sauce. It's delicious.
Nobody likes that.
No, yeah. It's
gross.
True. Yeah.
I can't even have like curry.
I know. I might have some now just to make you upset.
Aww.
But anyway, as we kind of get into things that we're terrible at during Lent, I think we have a little bit more progress to make on this book. So we were like, we should do it. Like we'd kind of marked this date on the calendar. Like, let's talk about our progress in the book. Like, let's talk about the book. And then we're like, we've only read like a couple chapters of this book.
Yeah. Cause we're not doing so great. Lent.
Yeah. Cause Lent sucks.
Don't worry. There's lots more Lent to make it up with.
But it has given us, you know, like a little bit of a taste of what Sister Joan is aiming for and why she chose this title and what she's trying to like kind of get at. And I do think that when you look at it, the chapters are really only like 2-3 pages long.
They're little meditative
chapters.
And
I think it's meant to be more of a daily reflection than I have given it like the opportunity to be. So I think that's kind of my goal for the rest of Lent is read like, you know, a chapter a day or a chapter every other day.
Because they are short.
Just to kind of, like give myself that little check-in.
And the titles of the chapters are kind of intriguing. Mm-hmm. So that does make me a little more hopeful. Like her intro is super strong.
Yeah.
And then I read, like, the first 3 or 4 chapters, and, like, some of them I'm, like, highlighting their underlying things. Others I'm, like, I don't agree with this.
Right.
You know, for me.
I do love me a good table of contents.
I do, yes.
Read it like a roadmap.
She's got, like, 32 short chapters, and some of them sound interesting. So we're hoping to get a little bit more out of this and probably going a little bit deeper on it. But it's an easy read, so if you're looking for a Lenten read, I would recommend it as a good starting place. It's not bad. It might be better when we get into it more.
Well, and we will be, and I know I've said this like every podcast for several weeks, getting the Lenten reading list up and running.
Yes.
This will be on the Lenten reading list. I just finished reading, and it'll give me an opportunity to dig into this a little bit more now that I'm done with this other one. An Absolutely Remarkable Thing by Hank Green that I will pass off to you. Okay. I started out reading just as a fun distraction, right? Yep. And it's by like Crash Course and SciShow and all these things. He's like a vlogger for science.
Vlogger.
Yes. And he has a brother who's a vlogger for history. And it's like,
oh my gosh, their mother is like the proudest person.
Every AP US History, AP Biology, AP Chemistry student in the country is watching these guys' videos to learn about stuff.
Wow.
Like they're very interesting. But then he wrote this like fictional book about like aliens coming to Earth. And I started reading it just for fun, but as tends to happen, I get like halfway through the book and I'm like, wait, no, this book is not just for fun. This book is about spirituality, and this book is about having faith in humanity, and this book is about, and so that will be on our Lenten reading list.
That goes on the daylight side of the column. Between the dark and the daylight.
Exactly.
Maybe that can be our reading list themes, you know, the dark and the daylight.
Between the dark and the daylight. Yeah. So we'll
I'm
round
excited
out.
To try it
usually
out.
Usually we put 5-6 books on there, so we'll get that posted.
I was thinking like, you know, this book from Sister Joan Chittister is not a fictional book.
Right.
And it's not a story book, which is also I think makes us work harder. Like, we often read books that are not those things, yes. but we really love books that are those things. So there's kind of that Lenten work in this
work.
As well.
It is. Yeah. It's work to read nonfiction for us.
We like things in a story format. Okay, thanks.
Exactly. Yeah. If it could involve, you know,
is
magic
there an escapist
or
fantasy
aliens
aspect to
or
this?
Dragons or something. It would be really great.
We're so bad.
It's not our fault that we have active imaginations.
We live in a beautiful world.
Yeah. But what we did want to do with our Lenten reading, as we kind of got into Between the Dark and the Daylight and embracing the contradictions of life and how paradox is woven into the very fabric of Lent for us, we kind of talked about what if we were to write our own book, which someday we will. Someday.
You know, we do these writings and we think about how they could ever be a book. And I think it'll be the work of Mrs. Guest's life to try to edit us.
I know, right? Try and
I already feel bad for her. But like, okay, so maybe some different things. But Paradox was actually an inspiration for Church Drunk. Like, exactly. I almost wanted to call the podcast like something with the word paradox in
yes,
it. And Church Drunk itself is sort of paradoxical.
Because we were saying like, well, what if we were to write a book about paradox as Sister Joan Chittister did, and what would we call it, you know? And it's like, you were like, well, I think we would probably just call it Church Drunk. Like, that's our life's work about paradox is being church drunk all the time.
We're in it now.
Yeah. But if we were to pick more sort of formulaic titles, if we were to follow Sister Joan's model of Between the Blank and the Blank, what kinds of things might we call our books about paradox? We thought we might kind of bring that to the podcast today.
You have like prepared things.
I have two.
And I would like let's let you start with that because I'm a little flying off the cuff here a bit more.
So
I've got an idea though.
Between the Dark and the Daylight, if we translate that into our own lives, I had Between the Shit Show and the Shower. You know? Like between the complete hot mess of one's life. And then the cleanse, you know?
And
the,
this is one of those profound rinsing life questions.
Yeah.
If one were to shit and shower, which order should one go in? I have a definite opinion about this. So, and I think the way you phrase it is correct, between the shit show and the shower. Yeah. That's the direction you always want to be moving.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
See, I wasn't thinking.
You're in an endless loop of horror.
I wasn't thinking of the shit show in terms of like something that actually happens
we're in the bathroom.
On the toilet. I was thinking more of a metaphorical shit show, you know, like when your life explodes as a shit show. But I suppose between the shit show and the shower also has like a very literal connotation. And I also would go with that particular order. Yeah.
I think everyone should.
Yeah. Don't shower and then shit show.
All right.
Yeah. So I would say that's one sort of
living in the midst
paradoxical
halfway
title
clean.
that we could put on our church trunk.
Halfway clean.
Halfway clean.
Between the shit show and the shower.
Between the shit show and the shower.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
I was thinking of my current favorite metaphor, and it's been for about 2 years, right? The Dorito of Doom. So I was thinking between the Doritos of Doom and the cheesy poofs of Pirate's Booty, an organic poofed up light and fluffy snack versus the Dorito of Doom and all that the main one represents. So there's this big in-between place. They're both like nummy snack foods to each side, you know? It's like, what if you're in the middle?
I feel like that's what comes after the colon in the title, though, you know? like if you're not every time.
I'm really afraid right
the
now.
The toilet humor.
You conditioned me this way.
The colon in the title, right?
So I do love grammar.
Because if you actually title the book, and I'm not saying, I'm not here to rain on your parade, but between the Dorito of Doom and the cheesy poofs of Pirate Booty, that feels more like a subheading than a heading to me.
Okay.
But,
okay.
You know, but I'm not, I don't need to have a colon in my title of my book as opposed to real life where I do think that I need a colon. But anywho.
I'm moving on.
Yeah.
I'm just going to straight move on. What's your second one? Go ahead.
Okay. I had between the Hootenanny and the Hangover.
You just wanted to say Hootenanny.
Actually, I was trying to come up with something.
The Hooli.
Because at first I was like, well, between the party, right? Between the fun and then the Hangover, which is actually flipping.
I do want to live in that
Sister
middle
Sister Jones kind of back.
Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, like she goes negative then positive.
Mm-hmm.
And so the party is the positive part and the Hangover is the negative part. But I do like that middle space when the party's done, but you're hanging out with a few select friends.
Yeah, the after party.
But then you haven't, you know, woken up to the horror of the next day yet.
Ugh,
so I was looking for something that would be a synonym for party, but that started with H, and that's how I arrived at the Hootenanny, between the Hootenanny and the Hangover.
I like it. I love that place. I want to live in that place. The Kingdom of God between the Hootenanny and the Hangover. Yeah.
Mr. Dizzy always does say that the hang, like having a really good night is like borrowing happiness from the next day.
It is true. Yeah, he's an old man living that example for us.
Savor that last little bit of the Hootenanny before the Hangover shows up. Don't let it stop.
Is that why he just keeps the party going?
Yeah.
Drink more, everyone. Yeah. The Hangover's coming.
And then if you were to take Sister Jones, like the bad thing and the good thing, then you could do like between the Hangover and dragging your ass to church on Sunday morning. Sometimes
nothing
still
like
hungover.
A half-drunk church
service. The
worst. Like, sorry, Jesus.
It's the worst. Yeah.
All right. Man, that takes me back.
Doesn't
it's been a while since I did that, but it's happened. It's a real thing.
It's not pleasant.
Whew. Yeah. All right. Well, my other one, actually, Mrs. Guest helped me just think of as we were coming in here, which I think is actually simple but profound if you stop and think about it. Between the sisters and the misters.
Between the sisters and the misters.
And it really sums up like our world, right? Like all these things that are happening between women and men, like navigating this culture and like what's coming up new. I think there is this new wave, but how do we also make it a good thing for everybody?
How does the hashtag Me Too movement actually turn into a new, better reality, right?
Because
right now we're kind of stuck in the badness. We're stuck in the midst of bullshit.
I don't even know which side's the bad side, but there's just like this thing between all the sisters and all the misters.
Right. Well, and I think what we're finding is, right, so there were, if you look in the past, right, things were bad and the ability to even highlight that they were bad was kind of like revolutionary, right?
Yeah.
So you look at the civil rights movement, you look at women's suffrage, you look at all these things where it's like, okay, people are being actively oppressed and everybody seems to be okay with it. And then you go, well, that's not okay. Right. Well, now we've moved past that and yet we haven't because as racism and sexism and harassment
new
and everything
version.
Else rears its ugly head again, we're realizing like, oh, all we've done is like take one institutional evil away and replace it with like an unspoken institutional evil.
And the work continues to be like dragging up our own cumulative, collaborative shit in darkness and being like, look at all this that's still here.
Yeah.
We need to clean this up.
It is.
And that's the work between the sisters and the misters to get it done.
It's paradoxical in its own way, right?
Yeah.
Like how far we've come and how far we yet have to go.
What we discover is still lurking
deep
down.
Exactly.
Or not that far down.
Or not that far down.
Yeah. So Lent continues. We would love to hear from you if you are also reading something interesting, if you're going to join us in reading Between the Dark
and the
Daylight.
Between the Dark and the Daylight by Sister Joan Chittister.
Chittister?
Yes.
Yes. You can email us at churchdrunk@gmail.com. You can tweet at us.
At churchdrunkpod.
Yes.
And we'll be posting this week. Promise.
It's happening.
Swear to baby Jesus.
Oh my gosh.
We're gonna
that's
get
a real promise.
That I know is a real one. I don't like to make baby Jesus cry. I've done it before though. I can do it. I know, I'll probably do it again. But we'll get the reading list up and we are continuing to compile songs for our musical Stations of the Cross. So feel free, send me in a recommendation for that. And we'll get all that up and running as we continue through our 40 days of Lent that should have been 40
hours
of Lent.
We were robbed.
But
or something.
You know.
Yeah. Anyway,
we'll get there.
Here we are.
Yeah. So we'll see you. No, we won't see you.
Nope.
We just see a little microphone.
We'll talk to you.
We'll talk to you next time on Church Drunk next week as we come back for our days of Lent.
Between
Church Drunk, where we're always between the closet
and the cocktails.
And the cocktails. Or sometimes the cocktails are just in the closet.
Sometimes the cocktails help you out of the closet or back to it. Cheers.
Cheers.
No clink.